Chapter 34. It was Saturday night, the big night in Dump City. The Blauberg mine was the oldest producer on the Kitchenerville field. There were sections of its property which had been worked out completely, and the old waste dumps were now abandoned and overgrown. Among the scrub and head-high weed in the valleys between these man-made hills had grown up a shanty town. Dump City, the inhabitants had named it. The buildings were made of discarded galvanized iron sheets and flattened oil drums. There was no sanitation or running water. Remote from the main roads, the residential communities of the neighbouring mines or the town of Kitchenerville, hidden among the dumps, accessible only to a man on foot, never visited by members of the South African Constabulary, it was ideally suited to the purpose for which its 300 permanent inhabitants had chosen it. Every one of the shacks was a shebeen, a clip joint, where watered liquor was sold at inflated prices, where dagga, or marijuana, was freely obtainable, and where men from the surrounding mines gathered to carouse. They came not so much for the liquor. Each of the mine hostels had a bar where a full range of liquor was on sale at club prices. Very few of them came for the dagger. There was little addiction amongst these well-fed, hard-worked and contented men. What they came for were the women. Five mines in the area, each employing 10,000 or 12,000 men. Here at Dump City were 200 women, the only available women within 20 miles. It was not necessary for the young ladies of Dump City to solicit custom. Even the fat, the withered, the toothless could behave like queens. Big King came down the path that skirted the mine dump. With him were 24 of his fellow tribesmen, big Shangaans wearing their regalia, carrying their fighting sticks, and still tensed up from the dancing. They came at a trot, Big King leading them. They were singing not the gentle planting or courting melodies, not the work chant, nor the song of welcome. They were singing the fighting songs, those their forefathers had sung when they carried the spear in search of cattle and slaves. The driving inflammatory rhythm, the fiercely patriotic words, wrought so mightily on the delicate susceptibilities of the average Shangaan that the company had found it necessary to ban the singing of these songs. Like a Scot hearing the pipes, when a Shangaan began singing these warlike chants, he was ready for violence. The song ended as Big King led them down to the nearest shanty and pushed aside the sacking that acted as a door. He stooped through the opening and his comrades crowded in behind him. A brittle, electric silence fell on the large room. The air was so thick with smoke, and the light from the suspended hurricane lamps so feeble, that it was impossible to see the far wall. The room was filled with men, 40 or 50 of them. The smell of humanity and bad liquor was solid. Among this press of men were half a dozen bright spots of the girls' dresses. But with their curiosity aroused by the singing, more girls were coming through from the interleading doorways at the back. Some of them had men with them and were still shrugging into their clothing. When they saw Big King and his warriors in full war kit, they fell silent and watchful. At Big King's shoulder, one of his Shangaans whispered,
"Basutos! They are all Basutos!"
He was right. Big King saw that they were all men of that mountainous little independent state. Big King started forward, swaggering just enough to make his leopard tail kilt swing and swirl, and the heron feathers of his headdress rustle. He reached the primitive bar counter. "Flying bird," he told the crone who owned the house, and she placed a bottle of Eagle brandy on the counter. Big King half filled a tumbler, conscious that every eye was on him, and drained it. Slowly he turned and surveyed the room. "What is it," he asked in a voice that carried to every corner, "that sits on top of a mountain and scratches its fleas? Is it a baboon or a basuto?" A roar of delight went up from his shangans. "A basuto!" they shouted, crowding forward to the bar, while a growl and mutter went up from the rest of the room. "What is it?" shouted a basuto, jumping to his feet, "that has feathers on its head and crows from a dung heap? Is it a rooster or a shangan?" Without seeming to move, Big King picked up the bottle of Eagle brandy and hurled it. With a crack, it burst against the basuto's forehead, and he went over backwards, taking two of his companions with him. The old crone snatched up her cash register and ran as the room exploded into violent movement. There was not enough space in which to use the fighting sticks, Big King realized, so he lifted a section of the bar counter off its trestles, and holding it in front of him like the blade of a bulldozer, he charged across the room, flattening all and everything before him. The crash of breaking furniture and the yelp and squeal of men being struck down drove Big King beyond the frontiers of sanity into the red, atavistic fury of the berserker. Basuto is also one of the fighting tribes of the Nguni group. These wiry mountaineers rushed into the conflict with the same savage joy as the Shangans, a conflict that raged and roared out of the single room to engulf the entire population of Dump City. One of the girls, her dress ripped from her back, so she was left with only a tattered pair of bloomers, had climbed on top of the remains of the bar counter, from where, with her big melon breast swinging in the lamplight, she shrilled that peculiar ululation that Bantu women used to goad their menfolk into battle frenzy. A dozen of the other girls joined in, trilling, squealing, and the sound was too much for Big King. With the bar top held ahead of him, he charged straight through the flimsy wall of the shack, bursting it open like a paper bag. The roof sagged down wearily, and Big King raged on, unchecked, down the narrow dirt street, striking down any man who crossed his path, scattering chickens and yelping dogs, and roaring like a bull gorilla. He turned at the end of the encampment and came back, his frustration mounting as he found the street deserted except for a few prostrate bodies. Through the gaping hole in the wall, he entered the shebeen once more, to find here also the fighting had died down. A few of the participants were crawling or moaning as they lay on a carpet of broken glass. Big King glared about him, seeking a further outlet for his wrath. "King Nakulu!" The girl was still on the trestle table, her eyes bright with excitement, her legs trembling with it. Big King let out another roar and hurled the bar top from him. It clattered against the far wall, and Big King started towards her. "You are a lion!" She shrieked encouragement at him, and she took one of her big black velvety breasts in each hand and pointed them at him, squeezing them together shaking with excitement. "Eat me!" she screamed, as Big King swept her off the table and lifted her high, ran with her out into the night. Carrying her into the scrub below the mine dumps, holding her easily with one arm, ripping the leopard-tail kilt from his own waist as he ran.